Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable in our third hour. I'm Joe Donahue. Author Jeremy Bushnell will present his new novel, Relentless Melt, tonight at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. He'll be joined in conversation by Christopher Boucher. The book is described as Stranger Things meets the golden age of detective fiction. It is a supernatural detective thriller that introduces us to Artie Quick, a sales assistant at Filene's in Boston, who moonlights as an amateur detective. The event tonight is at 7 p.m. The name of the book is Relentless Melt, and the author is Jeremy Bushnell, who joins us on the roundtable this morning. Jeremy, thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you on the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, real pleasure, and very nice to have you at one of our great bookstores in the area. How did this particular novel come about?
Well, I was thinking about, it's sort of an old-fashioned term, but I was thinking about the term valor, you know, where we think of people as being valorous. And I thought, you know, I would love to read a really good book about valor. I haven't read a good book about valor in some time. So I got to think about, what are the figures that I associate with valor? I thought about the teen girl detective. I thought it was just a really great image of valor. And that was sort of the germ of it. And things started to grow from there.
Which is interesting, because I think valor is one of those terms, sort of like maybe even grace, that it's sometimes hard to put your finger on exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's sort of a mixture of bravery and pluck, I think.
And what, once you had that, then where were you able to go? Where did that allow you to bring the story?
Well, I had also started thinking about early Boston. I teach at Northeastern University as my day job, and I was looking up some of the early history of Northeastern University, and it has some origins as a night school where they were teaching young men, basically vocational enterprises, teaching them to do, draftsmanship and things of that nature, trying to get them ready for a workforce. And somehow those two ideas dovetailed together. And I was like, what if they had a course, and this is an invention of my own, but I was like, what if they had a course in criminal investigation, and this young woman wanted to take a course at a school that was really for young men, and put her in some interesting situations and create some difficulties. And that was where we sort of got started. Well, this young girl, she's going to be in 1909 in Boston, trying to figure out, how can I get an education, you know, which wasn't really that easy at that time.
This is Artie Quick that we are talking about, and wants to pursue these studies in criminal investigation. And this is at the Evening Institute for Younger Men at the YMCA. And as I pointed out in the introduction, holds down a job as a sales girl in women's accessories at Filene's. So what is it that it seems that the thing that really drives Artie here is wanting to get out and get out of that and that life, I guess, but also to sort of find out what else is in the world, and because Artie is a very inquisitive person.
She is, and she's especially inquisitive about something that's happened to her brother. She has a sibling who she's been close to, of course, growing up as siblings, and he gets interested in crime. You know, he's lured into the life of gangs in Boston in 1909. Now, this is pre-prohibition, so it's not really organized crime as we sort of understand it. As we all know, prohibition sort of gives organized crime a jump start in America. But there's earlier organized crime. There's sort of young gangs of kind of thieves who work together. Her brother gets kind of lured into that lifestyle, and he eventually stops coming home. You know, he sets out on his own. He abandons the family. And Artie is quite hurt by this, you know, but also is curious about, like, what is it about crime that's so enticing? What is it about crime that could really break a family apart? You know, is it just the lure of easy money, or is it something else? So that's part of what generates her interest in detective work. And she's like, maybe if I learn my way through life as a detective, I can understand something fundamental about crime, and in so doing, understand what really happened between my brother and I.
For you, what did you find enticing about writing about crime?
Well, it's funny because in my research, I found an old book called Criminal Investigation. There's a scene in a classroom early on in the novel where we see a professor reading from this textbook. And the textbook is real, and the phrases that he reads from, the passages he reads from, they're quite short, but they're also real from this book. And, you know, he's talking about, to be a good criminal investigator, he's quoting from this book, and the author of that book says, to be a great criminal investigator, you have to be observant. You know, you have to always be going out into the world and looking for the right details. You know, you have to really be an expert in like a lot of very different fields so that you can understand what you're observing, what you're learning. You have to be a quick study of other humans and so on. And the more I read that, the more I was like, that sounds a lot like writing to me. You know, it's very appealing to a writerly mind. You know, in some way, all writers are a little bit, they all have a little bit of the detective in them. You know, they want to understand what makes people tick. They want to understand what makes human situations work. So that was very, very enticing, and I just had to include some of that book in my novel.
We also meet Artie's pal, Theodore. Tell us about Theodore, this young bachelor who has an interest in the occult, of all things.
Yes, he's a little bit more from the well-to-do side of things. You know, Artie's family is, you know, they're not in poverty. They're in sort of what would eventually be sort of the emerging middle class. You know, we don't really think of 1909 as having much in the way of a middle class, but there were professional trades, you know, and there were people who were, you know, families that were not, you know, didn't quite split into the rich and the poor as simply as we might think. You know, so Artie's sort of in the lower middle class and maybe working her way up. She's got some money in the bank under her own name, which is also sort of unusual for that time. But Theodore is a little bit more well off. He comes from a family of diplomats, and he's 21 at the time the novel starts, and his diplomatic family has been called off to Belgium, and they're like, well, you're 21, you're a fully grown person. You know, we didn't have this idea that 21 is still quite young, you know. So he's essentially like installed in a townhouse and kind of left to his own devices. And he's quite lonely, you know. And so he sort of spent some of his time making his way about Boston and trying to find interesting people in the city. And that's part of what connects him to Artie, because Artie's also making a study of interesting people and eccentrics, you know, in town. So they bond over that. They bond over looking for the interesting or the unusual, you know. And it's partially Theodore's interest in the unusual that leads him to, you know, to art or to an interest in the occult. And ultimately, my novel is a fantasy novel, you know, so there is a school of magic in Boston. And it's not just a school of stage magic. It's a school that will actually teach you how to do spells and things like that. And he's getting interested in that world. At the start of the book, he's trying to learn his first spell.
You just use the words unusual, and that is something that an eccentric, and that seems to be in good supply in Boston. I mean, it's a neat place to set the novel for that reason alone, I would think.
Sure, and in fact, this thing, the School of Magic, I owe some apologies to the original proprietor, because it was a real place. You know, the inclusion of it is from a photograph that I saw when I was doing the historical research. I found this photo of just the storefront that said Boston School of Magic, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so enticing. It must go in the novel, you know. Now, of course, at the time, that was a school that taught stage magic, I believe, and had stage magic props for sale and things like that. And I sort of run with it, and we're like, what if it was a real school for real magic? You know, and it's sort of it's got some sinister. There's some sinister aspects of it that, you know, weren't really present in real life. So my apologies to whoever the true historical proprietor was of this shop, but you know, just doing the research was so provocative. There were so many things that I found where I was just like, that must be included, you know.
Well, that's an interesting word to use, provocative. I mean, you gave one example, but give some other examples of the provocative nature of the research.
Well, you know, I got also interested in studying the city itself. You know, I got interested in studying just even simple things of like 1909 is sort of an unusual transitional moment for Boston. It's sort of at a pivot point between kind of the old world and the new. You know, it's like there are automobiles, you know, but there are also still horses and carriages at the same time. You know, they've begun to electrify the city and they're putting in streetlights, but they're not all the way. There's only portions of the city that are electrified, you know. It was things of that nature that got me very interested in as a transitional time. You know, women are beginning to like enter the workforce. They're beginning to get some financial independence, but still they're not totally free of the, you know, the restrictions that kept them sort of bound to their family or bound to men. You know, so all those interesting little pivotal points, I think I found some way to include in the novel. And also, of course, the subway is some of the subway is built at that time. Some of it's been around for the oldest parts of the subway are around 10 years old at that point. But they're still building out the lines, you know, and I got very interested in the way those lines were being built out. And that comes into play in the novel as well.
I say this only as a compliment, but the book is very funny, of course, and is beautifully told. But it is a weird book, isn't it? It seems to embrace its weirdness.
Oh, definitely. You know, my very first novel with Melville House is called The Weirdness. You know, and it's also a book that looks at that one's set in the present. You know, and it's set in New York City. It's a little bit of a different book. But I've always been fascinated with just like, yeah, sort of odd things that don't quite seem like they'll fit together. And I'm kind of like, can I put these in a novel and make it work? You know, and that extends to genre, too. You know, a lot of reviewers of these books or some of the people who have like blurred my books have often pointed out that like Jeremy likes to like mix genres together in interesting ways. There's always a little bit of like horror. You know, there's always a bit of fantasy. There's always a bit of like psychological realism, you know, there's a bit of lightness, there's a bit of disturbing stuff, and somehow it comes together. I hope that it finds people who like that mix.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, and again, it's unlike anything I have ever read, and while there's some familiar territory here, it is it's very unusual and kind of a breath of fresh air to see what you've done with it. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to hear.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've always been interested in books that do some of that genre splitting in their own ways. You know, books that are, you know, when literary writers try their hand at writing fantasy, or when fantasy writers try writing something that's more literary, you know, I always find that that's a real place where like sparks can fly as a different genre sort of graze up against one another and cause friction against one another. That's often very interesting to me, more than just a straight genre novel or a straight literary novel.
Jeremy Bushnell is the author of Relentless Melt, a really interesting new novel, which is out from Melville House. Jeremy, thank you very much for being with us. Congratulations on the novel, and I appreciate you being with us.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Be well. Again, Relentless Melt is the name of the book. Jeremy Bushnell is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.